You've tuned in to Radio Northern Beaches. We live stream on rnb.org.au across the northern beaches of New South Wales, Australia and all over the world. You can also catch us local on 88.7 and 90.3 FM. Our podcasts are available at your convenience at rnb.org.au or rnbpodcast.com.au. So you and your friends don't miss any episodes, don't forget to follow and share. Now here's our latest podcast. Listeners, today in the studios we have Susie Smither and Robert Jeffries, and they're from the Valleys. Welcome, guys.
Welcome to you. Welcome. Thank you for having me and having Robert on the phone. It's lovely to be at Radio Northern Beaches.
What we're going to do with Susie and Robert today is talk about how they got together, or how they met, what their backgrounds are, a little bit about, they've got a lot of awards listed, which is amazing. And then we're going to go on to talk to them about the Valleys and what's happening with them now, because they've done some amazing shows. A lot of people are raving about the shows.
Oh, thank you, darling. That's lovely.
For Susie,
I'll start because I was actually almost a grown-up and Robert was not. Robert and I met when he was about 7, is that right, darling? 7 or 8? Or 6 or 7?
I might have been younger.
6?
I think you were about six.
He was very tiny. He was a very tiny child. He has grown up into a lovely young man. Now, my history, very quickly, I was starting my career as a dancer. Then I met someone that was putting a cabaret act together, came to my full-time dance studio looking for dancers, and can we say from that the rest is history? That lovely person ended up being my boyfriend, my partner, my husband. But back then, he was looking for a singer, a girl singer, to go with two other people. So that's when my life with Triple Treat, the cabaret act, began. Very long journey, fabulous journey with that. That act collected 6 Moe Awards and 1 ACE Award. An ACE Award is an Australian Club Entertainment Award. The Moe Awards no longer exist, but they did. Now, that was just before COVID, I think, Robert, wasn't it, that the Moe Awards folded?
Yeah.
But it has a very long, 40-something year history when it was running. So if anybody was visiting Clubland in those days, they will know what a Moe Award is. So we also have a shopping centre and corporate event promotions business. So it was one of our shopping centre talent quests. We did a bajillion over the years. One of our shopping centre talent quests that a little redhead boy was brought along by his lovely mum, Christine, to be a contestant in the performance. So was this in your Shirley Bassey era, Roberta? Were you singing?
No, I don't think I'd even started singing yet. I'd just joined. I'd just come out of a star career as a NRL footballer. Enjoy that as much as my father thought I would. Although I do enjoy watching the games, but that came apparent later on. Teenage years, I've just rediscovered NRL. Let's just say that. But I wanted to do something a little bit more creative, and so I asked my mum if I could be to do dancing lessons, which I don't know where I got that from, because no one else did dancing lessons, so I didn't have any cousins that did dancing lessons. I just randomly asked for it.
Knowing you as I do, darling, that's quite unsurprising. He can just pull out something and do it magnificently.
I don't know where I even got the idea that dancing could be taught, but anyway, I apparently asked for it, and so mum enrolled me in the local dance school, which was Glendie School of Dance in Liverpool. And
which is quite a famous performing arts studio in our circle.
They produced some pretty special people out of there, and then they produced me as well. But Susie and Clive had a very strong affiliation connection with them, and they were looking for children models to model the children's wear.
Oh, that was before the talent quest, wasn't it? Or what? You were tiny then.
Yeah, so I hadn't even started to I hadn't started to really dance.
You were probably 5 then. I forgot about that. And that was at Roseland Shopping Centre. I remember
Roseland that. Yeah. I was just a little boy that would basically just stand where you wanted him to stand and you know,
do what you are, we were asked to do.
it wasn't a terror, so I think they just suggested me. But there's a wonderful photo of the moment when one of the older models, the more grown up models, must have got there.
There was a wardrobe malfunction of some nature.
And they said, "Oh, we need to fill time." And I think it was probably Clive.
It probably was. Yeah.
Said, "Well, bring out that little red-headed boy. He doesn't shut up."
He never shuts up.
I was ushered out to sit on the big couch in front of the big stage at Roselands Shopping Centre in something from David Jones or something like that.
Yep. And we had a chat.
We had a little conversation.
We had a chat. And there's a beautiful photo of me sitting on the couch, and there's this little tiny boy with his legs stuck out the front chatting about the latest fashions, which he just, you know, did, which was amazing. And then I got a signal that the wardrobe malfunction was fixed. What had happened? Did I just toss you off over the side of the fence or something, darling? You just exited.
I mean, you probably just said, "And thank you so much, Robert," and off you go. And into what I thought was, you know, the big grand dressing room. It was probably just a retail store that wasn't being used.
No, it was a tiny little room that was in a corridor, you know, down the street and round the corner. I remember that. Tiny, tiny little room. They used to call it the strawberry room. There we go.
Oh, really?
I don't know where all these memories are coming from, Roberta.
That's it. So that's sort of how we...
Yes, sort of, yes.
Really, and then you were sort of a big part of, obviously, I then started to do the Shopping Centre Talent Quest.
Yes.
Triple Treat ran every school holidays.
Yes, and won everything.
It was such an amazing opportunity for young people because, you know, one of the biggest things that I learn as a performer is, you know, that most of the audience aren't there in that context, aren't there to see you.
No.
The only person that is your mother.
Yes.
And everybody else that's there is mothers or family of other contestants that are sort of hoping that you trip and you fall and you do very well so then their person that they're seeing can...
Yeah, no, you never tripped, did you, darling? Never.
I know. Well, I knew who was watching, that's why. But then the other thing is, you know, the challenge became, well, if, you know, somebody was just wheeling their shopping trolley along and doing their groceries at Woolies, could you make them stop and stand for 3 minutes?
Yeah, that's a Mr. Clive story, that one. Yeah, you've got to make them stop and look at you and listen to you, which you did, because he was singing these massive, huge ballads perfectly, and he was six or seven, like this tiny little thing with this voice coming out. So obviously you would have won. You did win every talent quest that you went into because he has this extraordinary voice.
There was a stage, I think my signature song was New York, New York, and there was a stage there where I'd just be known as the New York boy.
Yes.
If I was in the heat or, you know, if the other parents saw me, they're, "Oh, the New York boy's here." Okay, I guess that's one spot gone.
Should I tell Christine about the rumour that was very prevalent in those days? It was a very scandalous rumour.
Really? I need to know.
I know.
Sorry, we're talking over top of you, Robert. I apologise.
The scandalous rumour was that somehow or other, unbeknownst to anyone, particularly myself, we had a secret love child. And the secret love child was Robert, because he's a ranger like me. The secret love child was Robert, and that was the only reason he was winning all the talent quests, because he was our secret love child.
Oh, people can be so cruel, can't they?
Point out that even though Susie is a ringer like me, we're both gingers, that is sort of the only common thing because she's almost 6 foot. I was definitely over 6 foot, and I'm a mere 5'7" at my tallest.
Yes, so, and at that age, he was like a little toy soldier, beautiful little thing.
6 or 7, I was like,
yeah,
so small.
Oh, it was such a strong. All the mothers were talking, and then Clive happened to say, "Ladies, do you think you could stop and listen to how the kid sings? That's why he wins." But it went on for a couple of years, this rumour that he was the secret love child.
It did.
Oh, my Lord.
My voice broke and I stopped for a little while. I stopped winning because when your voice breaks, you sort of lose a bit of ability to do it.
Yeah. How did you feel about losing your voice?
Oh, look, you know, it's very different for every boy because your voice, and being a singing teacher now, I understand this, but your voice breaks, every boy's voice breaks differently, but mine happened to break quite quickly.
You weren't away from the Quest for very long.
I did stop singing for about 6 months, and my singing teacher at the time said, your voice is broken really quickly, really suddenly, and it's kind of like you've just perfected, you know, the violin, and now you've been given a trumpet to play, and, you know, you've got to learn how to play a completely different instrument. And so I had a bit of time off, which was very difficult because I really loved singing, and I wanted to be, you know, as good as you can. But you go from having a range of, you know, two or three octaves to a range of about five notes. And but I went straight, and again, you know, to have the opportunity in these shopping centres and these, I just don't think that there are, these opportunities are around for young performers as much anymore.
No, not at all.
The opportunity to just go and go, well, you know what, my voice isn't what it used to be. It's not, I'm still learning how to work with the voice that I've got. But I'm going to get up and I'm going to sing a song in front of people, and that's the best way to learn.
Yeah,
you know,
great.
I wasn't winning like I was before, but, you know, to just get up and do it, I see so many boys now that sing before their voice breaks and then afterwards, and they completely lose their confidence because there's not any opportunities.
Not as many.
Yeah. Mm.
So what advice would you give to young men that are going through that scenario as far as staying and continuing on and pushing through it? What advice would you give a boy?
Make sure that you get up and you do it. Don't be scared of cracking on a note or something. And even if find the opportunities, and that's a lesson in if you want to survive in this industry, you can't wait for the opportunities to come to you. You find them. They are there. But even if that means, okay, there's not as many shopping centre talent quests or club talent quests going around, but there's heaps of karaoke nights. And find a song that you like to sing, just get up and do it, because you can practice and practice and, you know, and that's the other thing. If you're a singer, the best day that you're going to have with your voice is a day that is a Monday that no one is around and you've got nothing to do. Like, the best you'll ever sound is in the shower or in your car.
Or in the bathroom, yeah.
or in the bathroom. And you've got to learn to sound, you know, you've got to learn to raise the standard of your average. So if your average day, like if you're going to perform in front of, you know, 1,000 people, or you've got a big audition, chances are your voice is actually just going to feel, it's not going to feel the best it's going to feel average.
Mm.
So you've got to make sure that whatever your average is still at that standard.
But I think you had the best advice back then, which was to stop for a few months. You had an excellent singing teacher that, those of you that out there in the listening world that know me and Robert and I will know who that is, but you had an excellent teacher who advised him to just stop for a minute. Just stop, yeah, let it do its thing, and then get back to it after a few months.
Yeah, and it was very hard to do that, but it was the best advice because
you're not ruining it in the process, are you?
Well, you're not, because some days, you know, you wake up and you've got heaps of all this rain, you've got lots of high notes, and then other days you wake up and you've got lots of low notes, and then other days you wake up and you've got no notes. And if you're trying to do what you did yesterday and you can't, that's very demoralising. You know?
That is a very good description, darling. That's a very good description. Sometimes there's more low notes than high notes, but that's after we've had a beverage or two. So we don't have a beverage or two when he needs all of his notes, right?
We've done a 5-day tour in Victoria and I've...
and had 3 minutes sleep. That's right. So that's where we met. And the first time, as Robert, that was a wonderful story, darling. I'd completely forgotten about that. I know we've talked about it. The next time he arrived at the Talent Quest, and then off he went with that. As he grew older, he joined the ranks of the Triple Treat Promotion Pantomimes, which I nearly forgot that part. I haven't mentioned that to Christine yet. My husband used to produce big, full-scale children's pantomimes with adult cast and the little dancers from, at the start, Robert, remember, all the little dancers came from Glendy East Studio out at Cthulhu, and we moved through various different, as everyone grew older, but we had Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, A Little Red Riding Hood, Aladdin, and... the best Aladdin ever was a little small ginger boy that put a black wig on and lots of makeup and sang his way through the Aladdin pantomime.
Which was Robert.
That was a big ask, and he nailed it, didn't you, darling? He nailed it.
Well, you know, anything goes.
So he joined the ranks of that. We worked together with that for years and years and years. Doing all sorts of venues and locations and festivals and all sorts of things. Then we wound things down about 10 years ago now with the act. It was time. My husband wanted to finish on a bang. He didn't want to be one of those cabaret acts that everybody did the, have you seen them lately? They need to hang up their boots. He didn't want that to happen. So we retired on a bang. We had won the Mo Awards along the way. That was the time that Robert then went into music theatre. As a kid, he had a huge music theatre career as an orphan in Oliver, and as a what were you in the Wizard of Oz, darling? You were a Munchkin.
Well, sort of everything really, but I mean, yeah, mostly we were the Munchkins, and then we were the Emerald City people. You know, there's a whole children's chorus, which was fabulous.
So he had a lot of experience in music theatre as well, and of course that was before the Working with Children came in. So they did the whole 8 a week, had a ball, went everywhere. Now there's so many different rules and regulations on children's music theatre performance, which personally, we've never talked about this before, darling. Personally, I think it doesn't bode them well. I mean, kids are the ones with the most energy. Kids are the ones that can last 8 a week, whereas adults can fall by the wayside, you know. But you had the best years, didn't you?
We did. We didn't quite do 8. We did. There were 2 groups, so we did 4 each a week.
But there weren't as many rules and regulations as there are now, were there?
Well, my double in, so you always have a double in your sort of your counterpart in the opposite group. He was David Atkinson.
Oh, okay.
If David Atkinson was going away or something to Singapore and choreographing something, he would prefer to obviously take the family with him, and so there'd be weeks where.
Oh, lucky for you.
Away, and I would just be doing the 8 shows.
Lucky for you. But isn't that right? The children have the energy, don't they?
Absolutely, and I loved it. I loved doing it. I think I look at the kids now, and they sometimes, particularly the leads, they only get two shows a week or something like that. And I think, especially nowadays, the shows are not running for very long either. You know, they might only be running for 3 months. It's not enough experience for the kids to get it. Yeah, I mean, definitely the kids can definitely do.
Yeah,
can do that. I mean, you know, I was also still going to school, and there was all of that happening, but.
But that really wasn't – school wasn't a major part of our childhood, both you and I, was it?
No.
Only the social life.
once I sort of, you know, the voice broke and I sort of took all that, that's when I sort of started, well, I better do something. I thought I started taking school a bit seriously, so I got the good marks, but I've never used them.
No, we never used that. He's dyslexic and I've got dyscalculia, so between the two of us, we make a good pair. We get there in the end. After that, Roberts was working as a solo cabaret performer. He had a solo act for...
Probably the youngest.
Yes, I think you were, darling. I think you were the youngest back then. And he won an ACE Award for, was it Best New Talent?
Yeah, the NMO Award.
And he won in that, was it, the, it was in the same year, wasn't it? You won an ACE Award, NMO Award for Best New Talent. So he has one of each already on his own. I have my 6, 7, 8, whatever it is, with my act. So then Roberts decided he'd been in London for a year, just seeing what would happen, working, getting roles, whatever. And he decided when he came home that he would emulate something he saw in London, which was a Frankie Valli tribute show. And that was the kernel of the idea that he had. So from there, it just grew and grew. The dance studio that we were all working at that time, the principal of that dance studio was having a concert come up, and was it a month's notice you got? She said, oh, you're talking about this. All righto.
I don't think it was even a month. I think it was...
Yeah, it was shorter.
You know, a couple of weeks, 2 weeks or something.
And she said, okay, there you go. do it. You tell that story, darling.
And we're here talking to Susie Smither and Robert Jeffries from The Valleys. And Robert's just about to tell us about how The Valleys came to be. So go ahead, Robert, tell us about it.
Well, Susie mentioned there that, I did a bit of theatre first here in Australia. I was in the original company Wicked for 4 years.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And then I went to London. I did quite a few shows over there. I did a big panto in Windsor, and I did some stuff off the West End as well. But one of the shows that I was in as a corporate act was a show about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, and they also did a couple of other shows, songs more from the 50s, more from the 40s and 50s, rather than the 60s. And I sort of had never... I thought, who's going to want to see a show about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons?
Well, we all thought that, didn't we?
Once we did our first performance and there was a sellout crowd, and I looked at the reaction of the crowd, I went, oh, okay, well, I guess there's a few people out there that want to do that. And I got back to Australia, without going into too much detail. It's a very different industry over in the UK. Mm. In the UK, I found the entertainment industry, there's lots going on. People are more encouraging. It's a much more open world of entertainment. In Australia, came back to Australia with this got the huge shock of in that this is not how we work in Australia. It's a very closed off industry. The phone does not ring unless you know the right people. And
I think I'll jump in there and say, darling, I think it was all about if you start up something new. At that time, it was not really supported because it's something new. So let's not support it straight away because, little Robert Jeffries got this idea and it's new, so,
Well, even before that, even just coming back into the theatre industry in Australia, it's very different to the theatre industry over in the UK. But I thought, I'm not going to wait for the phone to ring. I'm going to try this idea. Had this idea rattling around, and then principal of the dance school that I worked for and I went to for many years said to me, well, look, I know you work well under pressure, so you've got 3 weeks, find three other boys. And keeping in mind, I'd been in London for 2 years, I hadn't really made any new connections here in Australia. Find three boys that can sing, dance, put together a 10-minute medley, find the red jackets, put the costumes
and there you go.
And we did that first performance. Interestingly enough, one of the boys was Benny Turland, who is went on to star in Neighbours.
Mm, gosh,
he's now a model. And yeah, he was in Saturday Night Fever. But what was funny is that performance was I got it recorded.
That performance was interesting.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I got the performance recorded, and it actually didn't look too bad, but it didn't sound amazing. So we couldn't use any of the audio, but we had something, and I think that's what kick-started it. That was in 2016.
Oh, my God, was it? So that was the last, that was the second Wollongong Bridal Expo.
Well, that was our first, I would say, professional experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Wollongong Bridal Expo. So, Susie, you can tell them about
how I worked for many years and still do work for our lovely friend Graham Stroud from Graham Stroud Events and Marketing, who owned the Sydney Bridal Expo for 27 years. And the second 15 years, I managed the exhibition floor and produced the 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 model runway show that we did three times a day, three separate sets of fashion, bridal fashion. And because it was an exhibition, people were trying to collaborate. So all the gowns, all the jewellery, shoes, veils, everything were gifted for the runway show by the exhibitors. And then us being us wanted to make it a little more entertaining, not just white gown after white gown. It was beautifully choreographed and produced by PJ Clark from Jeep Management, who I don't think he was Jeep Management back then, Roberta, was he? Anyway, he is now. He is now. So we thought, Clive and I thought, well, we need to inject something in there that lifts it. Okay, Roberta, get those boys in. We're going to put Frankie Valli in between the three shows to just give it a bit more energy and a bit of something for the hundreds of people there to look at. And if somebody wanted to book them for their wedding reception, well, we'd take that as well.
What a great opportunity.
We'd take that as well. So Graham had two at that stage, Sydney and Wollongong. Wollongong was a startup at the Wollongong Entertainment Centre, and it was a good place to put a startup group in. Everybody was excited that something from the Big Smoke was coming there. Everybody was very supportive of the first one, and it was good. It was really good. The boys did really well. It was a short, sharp thing, and I think that was kind of more of a start, Roberta, wasn't it, that there is definitely something here. There's something going on that can be great when you did the Wollongong one.
Yeah, that performance was a lot more, we had a lot more time, obviously, to put something together, but also, you know, I think the lineup, the team was probably just a little bit more rehearsed and ready to commit to shows. So, yeah, that was sort of our first professional.
Yeah, and then I put them into the Sydney one as well, which was great. That was great because we had a massive stage, massive runway, massive staircase down onto the floor. It was awesome. all very showy, wasn't it, darling? And the boys did a wonderful job on that, so that was good.
Well, let's fast forward to now.
Yes, let's go to now.
Yeah, tell us about what you've been doing in the last couple of years, and because we've had COVID since then, how that affected you, and then what's happening to you now? Well, where are you going? What are you doing?
I think COVID just decimated our industry. You know, travel, hospitality and entertainment were just decimated. We literally all sat at home for months and months and months because everything we do involves a crowd. And it involves travelling. And so we were just shot to pieces for that. We did have very, very quickly, we did have a lot of fun doing trivia arts. Robert started a trivia night, which we did online. I put that into the charity I'm president of. I put it into the council, Southern Shire Council, where I'm from. We did a lot of things. When we got our heads together, we did a lot of things on Zoom, which would feature in between the trivia, Robert singing or all the other friends, calling all our friends and colleagues in for that. So that was a fun old time, wasn't it?
the trivia was sort of my...
Yeah, totally.
Sitting at home, and we were all sort of sitting at home, and what was sort of really heartbreaking for me, because I run a business, and so the government at the time didn't really understand the art, but they understood business. So if you have a business, whatever that business is, whether it's entertainment or whether it's, you know, selling meat, it's a business to them. And so I was not too bad financially. I was very, very bored.
Yeah, we were fortunate. I did hasten to not mention that. I forgot. Mine is proprietary limited. So we had a stressful 8 weeks of thinking, well, can we sell the house? Can we sell the car? What can we do? And then it all kicked in for us. A lot of hundreds, thousands of people did not have the beauty of that, we must mention.
And including a lot of our friends and the people that, you know, I would employ people that are in the group with us, the Valleys. You know, and so for me, I think we all really missed...
And the boredom also, the boredom of it all.
I was so bored. And I wanted to create a space where people could perform again. And so I did it under the guise of like a trivia on Zoom. People paid $10 to get the Zoom link to contribute, and that was just $10 per person or per family, you know, whatever. But most people did the right thing and didn't, you know, share the link all around to thousands of families. But in between the rounds, I would have a performer, whether that be a musician or a singer, doing a couple of numbers, and about 80% of the takings of the night went to paying the performer. So, you know, they did a little gig, they got a little bit of money for it, but something that one of the performers said to me really interestingly, which really highlights the impact that it had on the performers, was, you know, he was at home, he was in his, you know, living room, set up with a camera and his keyboard, and before it, he said, I'm really excited about this gig, Rob. He said, I know it's so strange, but I've even put cologne on. You know, because he thought, I feel like I'm at a gig.
Oh, that's cute.
I've even put cologne on.
That's sweet.
Well, that's really lovely.
Yeah.
That was a great little opportunity.
God, that was fun.
The impact of COVID moving forward has been that you know, directly after COVID, a lot of the singers and the guys that we work with in the valleys all became very apparent to them that this isn't the world that, say, you know, existed 20, 30 years ago. And if something like this ever happens again, we're the first ones to go.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of them have gone and got day jobs and real jobs and all that kind of stuff, which of course makes things extremely difficult when you're booking gigs because you have to work around their schedules with day jobs, and it's also about finding employees and employers that understand that. So I think that's another big one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the entertainment's come back, but
it's nothing like it was before. Nothing like it was.
With people that are sort of going, well, I really want to do this gig on a Saturday night or a Friday night, but I've got to come from work and work's here and the gig might be in Mittagong. You know, and they have to sort of decide, do they want to do
this? Really change things.
Been pretty challenging as well. As a difference of as a difference of, you know, how it's been moving.
Yeah. And it's a lot less, but it's sometimes better quality now than it was. I mean, Robert often would say in a dressing room, like, tell some stories to the boys. We would work five nights a week, six nights a week with a cabaret act in clubland, corporates, cruises, all that back then. And now you're really ahead of the game if you work five times a month.
Oh, wow, it's so different. Huge.
It's so different, yeah. We had, like, the glory days of constant work, even to the point of picking where we wanted to go. Oh, we're a bit tired, we don't want to drive there, let's take the Sydney gig, you know. These days it just doesn't exist, and that's pre-COVID and post-COVID.
Yeah, and the clubs tend to go more for the bands that do the covers, and even they don't promote the way they used to do.
Yes.
You know, that
two-man bands, covers and poker machines. I'll just whisper that.
So we definitely need more venues.
Oh, speaking of that. So we do need to go fast forward a bit here. So the boys have been going great ever since then. It's gone from strength to strength. Clive and I were involved for a lot of the stuff, a lot of the, you know, advisory conference. We can talk till the cows come home, as you know, all of that stuff. I came on board when it started to really blossom, which was lovely to see, with merchandising tour, managing all the stuff that I'm good at and wanting to do.
You were the very first auditions, though.
Yeah, we did audition. We did audition because we realised Robert realised we needed to have a couple of swings, as well as people certified, card-carrying, professional, full-time singer-dancers. We needed to get more into the group, more into the book sort of thing. So we had a huge audition day. What year was that, darling? The Bikram auditions, it was known as. 2017, and it was 45 degrees the day we did it.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
It was so hot.
Oh, it's right bizarre.
Things like, of course, if somebody, you know, gets sick or something like that,
you always need a swing. And a swing, for people that don't know that term, is the understudy. A swing will swing into a role for just one night, or they'll swing into a role for a tour in Victoria if someone needs to be somewhere else for a family occasion or whatever. So we did those original auditions. We got some great people, and we still have one, Tom, the beautiful Tom, in the group from that audition. So it's been a lovely long journey. It has its ups and downs, like any job, you know. It has its challenging moments, and anything that involves a lot of different personalities coming together, like why did the Beatles split up? It's nothing to do with the career. It's usually to do with something else, you know. Yoko.
Personalities.
Yeah, yeah, all of that. So it's been a wonderful journey to watch the growth, and the growth, so much growth has happened since COVID just within the group. We've gone from different musicians, you know, to getting the right combination of the four different voices. Robert's always in the Frankie Valli slot, tenor one, because he has that, like, physically has that voice.
Yeah.
And it's just really gone from strength to strength. So many people know about the act because they love the music.
Oh,
they love the
Frankie
music.
Frankie Valli, it'll never
it's
die.
It's evergreen.
It will never die.
I mean, you know, if you're not great singers, you can trash it to infinity, but that's never happened. Yeah.
So
you
tell
know?
Us about the other members.
Shall we start with Roberts first? And then tenor two is a lovely gentleman called Kai Rule. And in 20 words or less, Roberta, explain Kai, his voice.
I can just do it in one. He's a kook.
He's eccentric. He's an eccentric, lovable, beautiful thing.
He's got the most beautiful voice. He is such a. His mind is just, you know, he goes somewhere else. When we're telling a joke on stage, he'll take it somewhere else, and the guy didn't even think of that angle. He's so fun. He's so joyous to be around. He's a brilliant, brilliant singer. He actually is my understudy.
Yeah, he's the only one that can match.
On the very odd occasion, if I'm not there, I do get sick, which doesn't happen very often, but if it does, he is the only one that
can really, he's the only one, yeah.
Just before we go into the group as well, or into the each individual member, I just want to bring it back to the Valleys itself, because what I really enjoy about this show, creating this show, and I've always said from the beginning, because you mentioned, you know, you've got to be a tribute act these days in clubs like that, and it's true. That is, you know, the flavour of the month. Tribute acts are definitely the main thing in clubs, and thank God we have clubs, because that's really where, in Sydney, we notice the difference between us when we go on a cruise ship. If there's an act from Melbourne or Brisbane that don't have the regular club work and that regular performing to that kind of audience where they're, it's kind of like being on a cruise ship where they don't have to necessarily go to the show, they can talk to each other, blah, blah, blah. We have that experience about entertaining that kind of crowd more so than sort of, so we're very lucky to have the clubs on the side.
Clubland teaches you how to navigate any situation. Right?
It does. It's just like the shopping centres and all that. But what I love about the Valleys is, yes, we are we tribute the music of Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, but we do not impersonate. We are completely ourselves.
Yeah.
So we are a group. We are a very, very tight group. Me, Kai, Tom and Jimmy are all a very tight group of people. So when you come to see our show, you're not going to walk in, and we're not going to be talking with New Jersey accents. And we tell the story of how Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons came and they developed and all that kind of stuff. And, of course, we sing their music. But we are very much still an Australian group. And that's sort of, I think, the main differentiator between us and some of the other tribute acts out there, that they will, you know, they'll put on the wigs and they'll talk like Stevie Nicks or something like that. We won't do that, because for us it's about an Australian audience is only going to really engage, well, they're going to engage the best with Australian artists and Australian musicians.
Exactly.
You want to give that to them, yes.
Exactly.
So that's been the joy of creating this and the point of difference between, I think, our show and why it's so successful and why it resonates with audiences. There's really not a disconnect from the word go. We do two Frankie Valli songs, and then as soon as we finish, we go, "G'day, everybody." And then I think that sort of sets everybody going, Oh,
they're Australian.
They're Aussie, and they're just like us.
And I have to say, too, the other silver bullet that Robert has always stuck by steadfastly is live band, a live band.
Yeah.
It just brings the whole thing to life.
Oh,
you know?
Well, that gives that just full stage presence and the real sound as
absolutely.
Well as the singing.
And it gives them, when they're working in the show, it gives them the flexibility. Like if the audience is generous and participating, they can go with that and the band will follow. You know, you can chop and change very quickly with a live band. And I said to Christine before we started, Roberta, we have some of the best musicians in the country, which is so wonderful that they all want to be with us because they have a lot of fun. It's great, fun, happy music.
So it's like a big happy family.
Yeah, and it's the music that pushes it on. Like if the music, and I have to also say, because he probably won't say it himself, Robert writes all the arrangements.
That's interesting.
The band arrangements. He writes all the vocal arrangements. He's done the choreography for the show. He writes, like if there's a topical thing happening, he will write a chart for a new song. They'll rehearse it a couple of times and pop it in. We popped in a new song at our second night at the Palms at Crown Casino when we were in Melbourne, and it was wonderful, and that's the joy of having a live band.
Oh my gosh! A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, you don't have to wait to go into the recording studio to do the track and blah blah blah, which he does tracks as well. But you could just do it on the sort of on the fly, as we say. And that I loved it. It was very well received. But going back to that, that's a very lovely description, darling. And we'll just quickly say, Robert, Kai, Tom, who is from our original auditions, he's a fantastic live performer, beautiful dancer, beautiful singer, an absolute crack-up as well, very dry.
We call it comedy hour with Tom.
Yes, he's got a very dry sense of humour. And then our beautiful Jimmy. Jimmy's our... everybody loves Jimmy because he's slightly smaller than the rest of them, and he's singing the bass. So he's a great addition.
What I love about Jimmy is Jimmy doesn't look like he is a little Italian man.
Yeah.
And so when we come out and before we start singing, one of the very first songs we sing is "Oh What a Night." We all kind of sing that together, pretty much in the same register. There's nobody singing the high parts or the low parts. It's sort of all similar at that stage. And then we go straight into "Walk Like a Man" with a, you know, going up there. And of course, everybody thinks Jimmy's going to come out with that
because he looks like a Frankie Valli New York American.
Yeah,
but he's not. He's Australian Italian. Yeah,
with the bass part.
Yeah,
we always get comments after the show that Jimmy is the best dancer. He's the best mover and groover.
Yeah.
We don't have any problems with that. We agree with that. He gets right into it. He's absolutely just a joy to work with.
Yeah, yeah.
They all are.
Yeah, they're a good and I've said, haven't I, for the past 2 years, they've actually hit the pocket. They're right in the pocket of where we all thought they would get to, and they've got there a lot faster.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and that was proven not this year. Is it last year with the Ace Award, darling? It was last year? God, the years are going so fast.
Yeah, we didn't get anything this year. But
No, yeah. Well, that's showbiz, baby, isn't it? Last year, we were nominated for Best Tribute Show, which that's lovely, and that's what it is, and we won that, and that was great. Like, that's fantastic. Thank you very much. Coming from myself and Robert, who already have awards, the other boys and us going, well, it doesn't really do that much for you. You're the top of the pops for like 5 minutes, and everyone else going, well, you two can say that because you've already got a bundle, you know, which we're very grateful for. Like, don't get me wrong, very, very grateful for. So then that was lovely. We won that, and then we all had a little champagne or whatever we were drinking, and that was that. That was our night, you know. We'll go up to the bar and celebrate afterwards. And then all of a sudden, we're at Performer of the Year, which is the last award always.
Well,
on the night, you know, the very last one. Yeah, and there we are, just sitting there, and blow me down. And the winner is the Valleys. And remember, it's Performer of the Year. And in all my history of going to awards nights, it's been a solo act. It's
right.
Like, for 100 years, the Performer of the Year is a solo act.
Right.
I think, from not really checking anything too much, but having been at most of them, this is the first time a multiple has taken out Performer of the Year.
Oh, wow. So congratulations.
I was so happy, excited, ecstatic for them, because it was a very big deal for the group.
It was huge, and it was very unexpected. We
all had to kind of pull ourselves together and to walk up, you know.
I didn't forget that we were nominated in that category.
Oh, that, yes, yeah.
So, to receive it. And, yeah, I can safely say we are the first.
Yeah,
There's been a duo win it before. The Robinson brothers have won it. The Robertson brothers.
Thank you. Not the Robinson. And I mean, we were never, Triple Treat was never nominated for the Performer of the Year, because in those days it was, you know, big stars, Jimmy Barnes, Julie Anthony, all those, you know, Anthony Warlow. So obviously the trio's not going to cut that, but we were in our correct category to win. But it was just extraordinary, and it was so lovely to witness it and to see, you know.
Wow, that's an achievement.
Yeah, it was really great. Really good. And then, as Robert said, this year we didn't get anything. But that's showbiz, and that's fine. You know, it gives someone else a chance.
Okay, so we're heading into the end of the show.
Okie doke, we need to come up to now.
So, yeah, what's ahead for you?
So we were having a little chat before we phoned you, Roberta, and Christine was asking after the trip to Victoria, which was a wonderful success. We were very, very delighted and very surprised and delighted that we had full houses all the way through. The audiences were amazing. We had...
I think we performed, I think, I calculated,
yes, yeah,
collectively over the 5 nights to about 3,500 people.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And our lovely promoter that we've been working for a couple of years now put us into the Palms at Crown Casino on the second, the two last shows, the second last and the last show. And my goodness, that was like from the get-go, because they're walking out, I'm standing in the wings doing my bit, watching the audience erupt from a tribute band from Sydney who has never – we've all worked individually in Melbourne, but not as the Valleys. This was the first time for the Valleys in Victoria.
Right. Yeah.
The audience just erupted. Now, I'm not exaggerating because, you know, you can't exaggerate because somebody listening might have been there that night, you know. It just erupted. And then the second night, I think the last 10, 15 minutes of the show, darling, the people were on their feet.
Oh,
a thousand people in the Palms in Crown Casino for a Sydney act that had never worked in Victoria. So it was wonderful.
That's something.
It was really wonderful.
Something. When you can get a crowd to react that way, that's pretty special.
And they were on fire, of course. The boys were on fire. And then we came home from that and had a very big sleep because, as you know, you would know on the road, there's no time to do anything except, you know, pack up and move the next day. So when we came back from that, I got a phone call from a dear friend of mine and a colleague, a beautiful performer called Maggie Scott. Now, Maggie's been around for years. She was, she is a comedian, a singer. She's a very much an entity, you know. It's a whole character that she performs as. And she has been with the Grandparents Club. I don't know if you know the Grandparents Club.
Yes, I do. I've been watching
She was
that.
With them for since the beginning. I was involved in that as production, costume design, choreographer, etc., for the startup. Forgot about that too. So Maggie and I connected again there. We've been mates for years. So then I got a call from Maggie about this venue that was starting up on the Northern Beaches. The person in charge had asked Maggie for production shows, for tribute shows, for this and that, and Maggie, God bless her, said to the person, well, you should try Susie from Triple Treat because she's still working, I've got her finger on the pulse. I know she's with a band at the moment. So the person in question rang me and the rest is history. We are taking in the Valleys on the 30th of November to the Collaroy Theatre, which is opening this month. I think it's a Friday night. They've got a lovely big local community brass band. Big night for the opening. We've got the Valleys in on the 30th of November at the Collaroy Cinema for the Valleys show, the award-winning Valleys show. Very generously, I was asked if the Valleys had a Christmas show, which we do have a Christmas show, so that was lucky, which Robert has written and done all the arrangements, the musical arrangements, the vocal arrangements. We're going back on Sunday the 7th of December at 2 p.m. for the Valleys Christmas show. And then I had another call to say we're looking for something on the 23rd of November and we'd like it to be cabaret. Now, you'll probably resonate with this, Christine. The person said to me, we want the audience to feel like they are visiting the local club on a Saturday night in the 90s and 2000s. And I said, well, you've come to the right place. That's where we've all come from. So on the 23rd of November, which is a Sunday, listeners, at the Collaroy Theatre, it will feature Lisa Crouch, who is very well known in Sydney. And if any of your listeners are cruise people that do back-to-back cruises, they will know Lisa Crouch very, very well. It features Lisa and a beautiful performer called Danny Elliott, who is a multi-instrumentalist. I think he plays about 20 instruments, doesn't he, Robert? Something like that? A huge amount of instruments?
Oh, probably more.
All sorts of weird and wonderful and your standard instruments, has a great little comedy in there as well. So, and a live band. I'm very lucky to have the budget, be given the budget for a live band. So that's happening first on the 23rd, back to the good old days, you know, with these two amazing acts and a live band and me. And then we back up on Sunday the 30th of November with the Valleys, and then Sunday the 7th of December with the Valley's Christmas show. And this is at the Collaroy Theatre, which is the beautiful blue building on Pittwater Road, 1930s Collaroy Cinema. So we're all very joyful that there's another venue opening up, aren't we, Robert?
So excited about it, and you know, it is the most beautiful Art Deco. It's right about that, isn't it?
Yeah, Art Deco. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Design with it's a beautiful blue. We're actually probably going to get some photos in front of it because it's very, very Frankie Valley in the Four Seasons.
It is. It is.
Yes, and we're so excited to also, yeah, as you mentioned, you know, do our normal show, but also bring our Christmas show because we only get to do that once a year. So, all the wonderful like Christmas songs, you can come along, you can sing along to all the carols. And we do a little bit of a comedy in it as well. So it's a very different show to what we normally do. Of course, we still always have the music of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and the 60s in there, but also just what a wonderful idea to bring it back to the good old days. On a Saturday night, letting performers do what they do. You don't need to go and you don't need to know their names. You don't need to. You can just trust that they're going to do the wonderful job that they're going to do.
Yeah, that's right.
And enjoy the music that they're going to perform. Lisa Crouch and Danny Elliott are two of the most sought after performers.
Yeah,
not just
great.
In Sydney and Australia, but internationally, they work all through cruise ships. We've had the pleasure of seeing their shows many, many times, and they are just both class acts, so make sure you get along.
I think people are starved for live entertainment that's relaxing and fun. And as I've always said about the boys, what they do, like with all the surrounding, the live band, the right lighting, production, sound, direction, whatever, they're recreating that Saturday night at the club. But our audiences, because we do pull a certain demographic of the community to the show, which is lovely. They are the people with the money and the time to be with us and share the love. The boys recreate that feeling, but the audience is a little unaware. They know they feel good. They know they feel great. They walk out singing the songs. They're gushing at the end of it because they've had such a great time. And I'm sitting back going, that's because you feel like you're at the club on Saturday night. That's how it's been firing for the last, 2 years. I'm so proud of them and so proud of Robert and so proud of what has come before and where it's going and all that. And as Robert's mentioned, to be a performer and an entertainer in Australia, it's hard yakka. It's a hard yakka, and you've got to be at the top of your game. You've got to have a very thick skin. You've got to be resilient and you've got to be ready. So we're always ready, aren't we, darling?
All right. Look, Robert and Susie, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you, and I'm sure I got a lot of tidbits in there that nobody else has got out of you in an interview before. So I'm really happy about that. But thanks so much for coming and talking to us, and we look forward to your shows coming through to the Northern Beaches.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be there. We're off to Melbourne next, and then we're off to Adelaide. We're off to Adelaide next in 2 weeks, and then we're back in Melbourne the week after that, or a couple of weeks after that, yeah. So it'll be very fun to be back in Sydney at Collaroy.
Terrific. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Radio Northern Beaches. It's Listen and Chat with Chrissy Mack.
Australia, the lucky country. We've got meat pies. We've got the world's best beer. But most importantly, top of the list, we've got Radio Northern Beaches 88.7, 90.3. Now hitting the entire world on www.rnb.org.au.